Manuscript Releases, Volume 1, Numbers 19 to 96. M.R., Number 20. Divine Revelation. Release requested by Arthur L. White for material used in series of articles for The Ministry on Divine Revelation. Prophetic Visions. They thought that I was dead, and there they watched and cried and prayed so long. But to me, it was heaven. It was life. And then the world was spread out before me, and I saw darkness like the pall of death. What did it mean? I could see no light. Then I saw a little glimmer of light, and then another. And these lights increased and grew brighter, and multiplied and grew stronger and stronger, till they were the light of the world. These were the believers in Jesus Christ. I never thought that I should come to the world again. When my breath came again to my body, I could not hear anything. Everything was dark. The light and glory that my eyes had rested upon had eclipsed the light, and thus it was for many hours. Then gradually I began to recognize the light, and I asked where I was.
"You are right here in my house," said the owner of the house.
"What? Here? I here? Do you not know about it?" Then it all came back to me. Is this to be my home? Have I come here again? Oh, the weight and the burden which came upon my soul. How the light came to the prophet. I arise at 3 o'clock this morning with a burden on my mind. In my dreams, I was at blank, and I was told by my guide to mark everything I heard and to observe everything I saw. I was in a retired place where I could not be seen, but could see all that went on in the room. Persons were settling accounts with you, and I heard them remonstrating with you in regard to the large sum charged for board and room and treatment. I heard you with firm, decided voice refuse to lower the charge. I was astonished to see the charge was so high. Letter 30, 1887, page 1. To Rice, June 11, 1887. The angel of God said, "Follow me." I seemed to be in a room in a rude building, and there were several young men playing cards. They seemed to be very intent upon the amusement in which they were engaged, and were so engrossed that they did not seem to notice that anyone had entered the room. There were young girls present, observing the players, and words were spoken not of the most refined order. There was a spirit and influence that were sensibly felt in that room that was not of a character calculated to purify and uplift the mind and ennoble the character. I inquired, "Who are these, and what does this scene represent?" The word was spoken, "Wait." I had not another representation. There was the imbibing of the liquid poison, and the words and actions under its influence were anything but favorable for serious thoughts, clear perception in business lines, pure morals, and the uplifting of the participants. I asked again, "Who are these?" The answer came, "A portion of the family where you are visiting, the great adversary of souls, the great enemy of God and man, the head of principalities and powers, and the ruler of the darkness of this world is presiding here tonight. Satan and his angels are leading on with his temptations these poor souls to their own ruin." Letter 1, 1893, pages 1, 2. To Sister D., August 4, 1893. I have been thinking of how, after we began sanitarium work in Battle Creek, sanitarium buildings, all ready for occupation, were shown to me in vision. The Lord instructed me as to the way in which the work in these buildings should be conducted in order for it to exert a saving influence on the patients. All this seemed very real to me, but when I awoke,
I found that the work was yet to be done, that there were no buildings erected. Another time, I was shown a large building going up on the site on which the Battle Creek Sanitarium was afterward erected. The brethren were in great perplexity as to who should take charge of the work. I wept sorely. One of authority stood up among us and said, "Not yet. You are not ready to invest means in that building or to plan for its future management." At this time, the foundation of the sanitarium had been laid. But we needed to learn the lesson of waiting. Letter 135, 1903, pages 1, 2. To Elder and Mrs. Haskell, March 8, 1903. Many other scenes connected with your case have been presented to me. At one time, you were represented to me as trying to push a long car up a steep ascent. But this car, instead of going up the hill, kept running down. This car represented the food business as a commercial enterprise, which has been carried forward in a way that God does not commend. At another time, you were represented to me as a general mounted on a horse and carrying a banner. One came and took out of your hand the banner bearing the words, "The Commandments of God and the Faith of Jesus," and it was trampled in the dust. I saw you surrounded by men who were linking you up with the world. Letter 239, 1903, pages 3, 4. To Dr. Kellogg, October 28, 1903. I was shown a large building where many foods were made. There were also some smaller buildings near the bakery. As I stood by, I heard loud voices in dispute over the work that was being done. There was a lack of harmony among the workers, and confusion had come in. Then one appeared on the scene and said, "All this has been caused to pass before you as an object lesson, that you might see the result of carrying out certain plans." Letter 140, 1906, pages 1, 3. To Brother Burden, May 6, 1906. Delivering the messages. Sometimes when I receive a testimony for someone who is in danger, who is being deceived by the enemy, I am instructed that I am not to place it in his hands, but to give it to someone else to read to him, because, being deceived by the insinuations of Satan, he would read the testimony in the light of his own desires, and to him its meaning would be perverted. It has been hard for me to give the message that God has given me for those I love, and yet I have not dared to withhold it. I would not do a work that is so uncongenial to me if I thought God would excuse me from it. Letter 59, 1895, page 11. To Brother and Sister Olson, April 12, 1895. When I had to tell individuals that you did this thing, etc., without one single human intimation that such was so, you may be assured that I had to set my face as steel before them. I have been afraid that I should not have the strength to write to you thus plainly, for to do it takes hold of every fiber of my being. It is indeed as if I were writing to my own son. Letter 180, 1903, page 2. To Dr. Kellogg, March 5, 1903. I had not the least idea of writing as I have done, but the Lord has carried my mind on and on until you have the matter I send. Letter 53, 1900, page 6. To Elder Haskell, April 5, 1900. I am now sitting on my couch with my pen in hand, writing. Ideas come clear and distinct, and very forcibly. I thank the Lord with heart and soul and voice. Letter 52, 1906, page 6. To Brother and Sister Farnsworth, January 29, 1906. Before I stand on my feet, I have no thought of speaking as plainly as I do, but the Spirit of God rests upon me with power, and I cannot but speak the words given me. I dare not withhold one word of the testimony. I speak the words given me by a power higher than human power, and I cannot, if I would, recall one sentence. In the night season, the Lord gives me instruction, in symbols, and then explains their meaning. He gives me the word, and I dare not refuse to give it to the people. The love of Christ, and, I venture to add, the love of souls constrains me, and I cannot hold my peace. When I have written one testimony to the brethren, I have thought that I should not have any more to write. But again I am in travail of soul, and cannot sleep or rest. In the night season I am speaking and writing clear words of admonition. I waken so burdened in soul that I am again driven to take up my pen. In various ways matters are opened up before my mind, and I dare not rest or keep quiet. Letter 59, 1895, pages 11, 12. To Brother and Sister Olson, May 12, 1895. My life has been spared by the mercy of God to do a certain work. I have pledged that life to Him, but the work is not always easy to perform. I have to take positions not in harmony with men whom I believe to be God's workmen, and I see that I must do this in the future as in the past. It hurts me more than I can tell. The dearest hope that I can have may not be realized, yet if God will show me the right way, I will walk in it. Letter 64, 1894, pages 4, 5. To Elder Olson, May 6, 1894. Now I must leave this subject so imperfectly presented that I fear you will misinterpret that which I feel so anxious to make plain. Oh, that God would quicken the understanding, for I am but a poor writer, and cannot with pen or voice express the great and deep mysteries of God. Oh, pray for yourselves. Pray for me. Letter 67, 1894, page 10. To Brother and Sister Prescott, January 18, 1894. Integrity of the Prophetic Message. My views were written independent of books or the opinions of others. You think individuals have prejudiced my mind. If I am in this state, I am not fitted to be entrusted with the work of God. Letter 16, 1893, page 1. To Caldwell, June 11, 1893. What if you had said ever so much? Would that affect the visions that God gives me? If so, then the visions are nothing. What you or anyone else has said is nothing at all. God has taken the matter in hand. What you have said, Sister Blank, influenced me not at all. My opinion has nothing to do with what God has shown me in vision. Letter 6, 1851, pages 1, 2. To Brother and Sister Loveland, April 1, 1851.
There are those who say, someone manipulates her writings. I acknowledge the charge. It is one who is mighty in counsel, one who presents before me the condition of things. Letter 52, 1906, page 9. To Brother and Sister Farnsworth, January 29, 1906. White Estate, Washington, D.C., November 20, 1940.